This is the Galaxy Wars podcast with your host, The Grays. Greetings and welcome back to another episode of the Galaxy Wars podcast with Jim and Tom. And this is going to be a dive into the horror universe, the horror galaxy of the world as we talk the Black Phone. But before we get into that, I feel like we need to address something that we've alluded to in season one. That was a movie that we never thought was going to do well and that we weren't ever going to go see. And a friend of ours was, you know, leading the parade for this movie. And we went on hiatus. This movie came out.
Yeah.
It kind of just did good numbers. And it's still in the theaters. And it's still doing pretty good numbers. And that's Top Gun Maverick. And I don't know if we're ever going to enter the danger zone. But, you know, this movie, for some strange reason, has passed Avengers Infinity War as one of the highest grossing movies of all time domestically. And
that's a crazy. Right?
And it's currently clocking in at $1.4 billion at the global box office. So, you know, Pace was absolutely right when he said this movie was going to be the biggest movie of the summer. And before, you know, maybe the year, it might do bigger numbers than everything other than Black Panther. But this is,
I mean, who know? I mean, the only draw to Black Panther is people want to know what happens. I don't know. Is that going to get a $1.5 billion global, I don't know.
You know, 5 years ago, I would have said, yeah, but the way Phase 4 is kind of panned out a little bit, and you know, there is that intrigue on like what happened to T'Challa, who's going to be the next Black Panther. Who, you know, who's the true villain? Is it Namor? Are they going to introduce other people? How does Riri Williams factor into this? There's a lot of stuff going on there. But, I mean, I feel like in terms of May to present, every single Scientologist came out of their cave and said, we need to support our guy. And they went and they saw Tom Cruise's movie. It made Miles Teller popular. It got mustaches back on the map. Glenn Powell, who I only knew from like the Expendables 3, is now being rumored as the front runner for Cyclops. So, you know, Val Kilmer was trending. There was a lot going on with that movie. Still not going to see it.
Val Kilmer. No, I have no. I know. I know what everybody says. It's good, but I have no interest. I never really liked the first one, and this one's not on my radar, but whatever. I mean, if it comes up and it's something that we want to do, then I will, I guess. But that's going to be the only thing that really pushes me to go see it, I guess.
Yeah, it's definitely not going to be a homework assignment for us. We're not going to do any extra work on it unless this wins an Oscar. The only time we'll review that is if it wins an Oscar. But that, I just wanted to address that kind of elephant in the sky at this point. But did
I think a lot of people are going to figure out what Val Kilmer's doing.
Yeah but I feel like that's that's why I would have went, but I feel like I already know what he's doing in that movie, and it's probably not a lot, but you know, you can only watch enough beach volleyball.
apparently they don't take themselves very seriously.
Yeah. And I heard that the big draw is that most of the stunts are in real time, which, you know, credit to the people who did it. That's amazing. You know, they opted for less CGI and went more practical. And, you know, as film and TV reviewers, you and I kind of always encourage that when necessary. So, you know, hats off to them, but still don't really care about that.
Back to
Phase 4 in Marvel. Did you get a chance to watch the first episode of She-Hulk?
No, I am. I like to let them stack up, and I'm going to binge them.
Okay, I'm curious.
I don't know exactly when that's going to happen, but
I think.
Yeah, that's my plan.
I feel like we got about six more weeks of it, five more weeks of it.
Yeah.
To get there. So I'm curious to see what you're going to think your first impression is going to be.
Yeah.
Because I didn't hate it. I didn't love it.
Right.
I feel like there was a lot of, you know, stuff that needed to be focused on, which they did a good job of, but there was a lot of stuff that they tend to let run throughout the whole episode where I was like, all right, you know, pump the brakes, yeah. You know, let this kind of play out. But that's not what we're here to talk about.
I think other comic book stuff's doing better than She-Hulk. Like, Sandman is getting incredible reviews.
Yeah,
I haven't watched that. I can't wait to watch
it. I'm three episodes into it. Love the first three episodes. A little leery because Netflix has been really quick to renew or cancel series, and they haven't even touched what they're going to do with this. And I feel like, you know, obviously Sandman can go very, very far. You could do an entire series just based in the Dreaming, or season based in the Dreaming. But I'm very curious to see where they go. And it's got a lot of shoes to kind of, like, it's got big shoes to fill because the comics are extraordinary.
Yeah.
You're recasting and gender bending Constantine, and Matt Ryan played a great Constantine when he was actually Constantine, not in Legends. You know, there's a new Lucifer, and Tom Ellis was very good as Lucifer. So there's a lot there, but also they did a really good.
But this is less. Not to say that Tom Ellis was great, but he was originally hired because of his looks. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, and he turned out to be really good and like really get into it.
And that Lucifer wasn't going to be what this Lucifer is.
Yeah, and that, yeah, it was totally different. And I don't mind the gender bent Constantine. Constantine's a gender bent character, and I, you know, whatever. So that doesn't really bother me. But, you know, we'll see. You know, that does have big shoes. That's something that they, I think is tough to recast, and hopefully, you know, they do a good job with it. But we'll see.
Yeah, you know, I'm not worried about the gender bending casting or whatever. I'm not worried about Constantine being Joanna Constantine.
Yeah.
I will say, from what I've seen so far, the Corinthian, as in the comics and in the audio podcast that they did a few years ago, which was spectacular, the Corinthian is probably my favorite character thus far, just because of, you know, the Corinthian kind of ties into what we're going to talk about next, the Black Phone. He's a nightmare, and so is the Grabber. You know, the Grabber is a child's nightmare, and it turns out to be a town's nightmare as we kind of move away from what we watch and haven't watched and move into what we have watched, and that's The Black Phone by Scott Derrickson. And we're going to enter spoiler territory. Going into this, I had no idea this was a Joe Hill short story. Did you?
No, I didn't. I didn't even ever seen it pop up. Like, this was never on my my radar, which is weird because kind of a Joe Hill fan. I think a lot of the things he does is, you know, his writing especially is really great. Well, I mean, that's all he is, but, you know, it's weird that it wouldn't come up.
Yeah, this was one of those ones where, you know, I saw the trailer of it. I didn't even see the trailer. I saw the poster and saw that Ethan Hawke was playing the main villain. Saw that Scott Derrickson,
which I didn't even know that was him. Like, I didn't know anything about this, and then everybody started talking about
it. Yeah, I feel like I saw the poster last year, and I love Sinister. We reviewed Sinister because it was scientifically the scariest movie in the world or ever put out. And I love Ethan Hawke in that type of film. I love Scott Derrickson doing that type of film. And those two have worked together. So I was like, sign me up. I'm here for it. And then it kind of went nowhere because it was supposed to come out in like January or February. And it crushed it at film festivals that they're like, no, we're going to give this a summer release. And movies are kind of, I have to really have time to go get out and see it. And I know you're the same way. this was one that was on my top tens of movies I needed to see in theaters. Never got a chance to see it. So glad it came out on Peacock. And I was stoked when I saw this. And after I watched it, I chalked this down as like, this is one of my favorite movies of the 2022 calendar year.
Yeah, I didn't know what this was. I didn't know where it came from. I didn't know anything about it until people just started talking about it, until it started to register on, you know, everybody else's radar. I never saw anything for it, I don't think. And what I would guess is the poster with the smiling mask and all that would, you know, you would, yeah, that's pretty rememberable. I mean, I don't think I would forget seeing that.
But,
I never saw it.
I saw that mask in my nightmares. And that was like the main reason why I wanted to see it, because I was like, wow, this kind of looks super scary, just that character alone. And like, had it been an A24 movie, which I love that studio, but their horror movies haven't hit the way that like a Blumhouse horror movie has. And when I saw that Blumhouse was doing it,
Blumhouse.
Yeah, right? And I saw that Blumhouse was doing it, and I was like, all right, I'm on board. Let me check this out. And just going into it, you know, this kind of fits our outside world niche instead of the podcast, where we're both really into the serial killer true crime universe. And this really hits on all of that stuff, because, you know, you think about this character of the Grabber, and he's essentially Bundy, Gacy, Dahmer.
What's weird, like, I mean, I guess we'll talk about it, but there is a spooky element to it, but it that's not a... I mean, they just give him directions and his sister sees stuff, but it's not even that important. I think it was a good thriller, yep, more than a horror. I mean, the supernatural is not really what makes this movie something people should watch. It's a really good, like you said, serial killer movie.
Yeah, and so, like, they don't spare you any fluff. They go right to it. Like, the baseball scene, boom, kid's missing. You know, Finney gets the shit kicked out of him. Next day, the bully's missing. That day, the bully's missing. You know,
right.
They're very quick with it. They're methodical with it. They give you a character that you're going to love with Finney, but then they give you another character that you're going to even love even more with Gwen. But they give you a character that you hate with Terrence, their dad, Jeremy Davies, who, you know, obviously, you know, lost his wife. She killed herself. And he's got two kids, an alcohol problem, and what may be some PTSD, maybe some, you know, maybe some lingering hangovers, whatever. And he's just trying to do the best that he possibly can as a father. He's an asshole.
Yeah. Well, he beats his kids.
Like, he's an asshole until his kids go missing, and then he wants to be dad at a year. And I feel like that's a common trope in a small town, you know, that quiet house that, you know, oh, we feel so bad for Terrence and Finney and Gwen. But then, you know, inside the house, you know, he's a monster. And to your point, the thriller aspect of all this was really good, because we knew Ethan Hawke was going to be the Grabber, but just like the method of doing it, and even just the introduction into the supernatural was really something that I wasn't ready for. You know, the phone rings, constantly rings, you hear, you know, like muffled voices, and then out of nowhere you see like the shadow, like the zombie ghost of the kid. Like, did that really like
Or kids like giving them directions and they don't know who they are. Yeah, it was really good.
Yeah,
like I said, there was no jump scares, but it was like you felt pressure. Like you felt a pressure building, and you know, you knew it felt like eventually somebody was going to get caught, but you didn't know when, you didn't know how it was going to play out. So.
Yeah. But, I'm curious if you felt the same way, or your mind went the same way, because I haven't really talked about this movie with anybody, because the only person I know who saw it was Chuck, and I think he just saw it a couple days ago. Did you think that when the phone was ringing that those kids were still alive?
Not really. I mean, well, I'll be 100% honest. Like I said, this took off and I knew about a lot of it before I got to watch it. So I kind of understood what was going on. And although that's bad, it still held up for me. It wasn't like I mean, the movie, that part of it was ruined, but I didn't know the ending, which, I'm sure there was an aspect to it because he does say, do you hear the phone? Do you hear the phone like right away? So it makes you think that it's real, but yeah, I don't know where to, I guess you could start to think that the kids are still there.
I was one of those people who thought that. I'm watching. I didn't read the IMDb stuff. And like, if you read the IMDb, like, a little blurb about it, it gives you the whole movie. But it starts ringing and ringing. And I'm like, it's the grabber upstairs just messing with Finney just to kind of dry. Like,
I did get a little bit of that. And even when is it his friend that tells him?
No, it was
not Bruce.
So it was the first guy told him to dig into the floor. The second guy told him not to go up the steps. No, second guy told him about
he'd be waiting up the steps. Yeah.
And then the third guy said, don't go up. It was the paperboy, I believe. He said, don't go up the steps because he's up there waiting. And I don't know what it was. Maybe it was like the Tom Savini mask, because I know he did these masks. I don't know if it was like the full mask, the half mask, or Ethan Hawke sitting in a chair with a belt, with a open like flannel, and that stupid hat and mask on. And I'm like, that's haunting. Like, that was like, again, like it was tense. Like, I felt like, and
yeah, right, exactly. That's what I was saying. Yeah, it wasn't scary as much as there was a pressure to, like, what it was building. You know what this is, I think. I mean, every character gives him a clue to the ending, you know what I mean? It has a better laid out signs, motif to it. You know, like, with the girl, like, everybody has their place. The mother tells them all something, and that's how you kill the aliens. And this all leads to the final fight with the grabber.
Oh, which was great.
Which was pretty good. Yeah.
Like, fill the phone with sand. Yeah. And then he's like, Finney's this guy who, he's a pushover. You know, he's out of his weight class. He's always in fights where he's out of his weight class, whether it's with the school bullies, his dad, and now with this deranged serial killer.
Yeah, but I think that's the point, is all those fights, and that's what, when his friend gets on the phone, that's what he says is, you're pretty tough. You take a beating pretty good. Like, you've been taking beatings for years. You're good at it. So that however this worked out, like, all these people were training him basically for this fight at the end of the movie. And his dad was beating him. His sister knew, had these dreams, and all these people on the phone, all took like one step in a direction, but none of them, all of them could hear the phone, but couldn't answer the phone. It was a good, I think the story was laid out really good.
I agree. This was like what I expected Lock and Key to be when it came out, and it turned into more of like a CW show with like a Netflix budget. And I still like Lock and Key. It's got 3 seasons. New season's out now. Go watch it if you want to. But Joe King did a great job with just making it a very, like, thrilling, kind of practical kind of film, but adding the supernatural stuff as well, like with the dead children giving him the pieces of the puzzle and training him, but also incorporating Gwen, who had, these flash forwards, spiritual visions.
Or out of body, I don't know, but where she's like in the cop car and stuff with the one kid. And what I think is good about this is it's a, like we said, it's a thriller with definite, like, evident, you know, supernatural things happening. I mean, that's basically the plot of the movie, but he doesn't lean too heavy in any direction to make you, like, to pigeonhole it. You know, like, it can't be pigeonholed as a horror because it has a very, it's like a decent, like, serial killer thriller movie, you know, a cop drama. Not even real, not a cop drama, but a serial killer movie. And then it has enough horror that it can't be really just strictly pigeonholed with, you know, what's that, you know, Red Dragon or you know, those other Thomas Harris movies. Yeah. You know what I mean? Silence of the Lambs. So it's different. It has like a, it feels a little different. I like it.
You know, one thing that this kind of reminds me of is it reminds me of The Lucky Bones. Do you remember that movie with Mark Wahlberg?
Yes.
With like Susie Salmon, right? That was her name. Where you're like,
yeah,
the premise of that movie, you're like, oh, this movie's gonna be great, and then it turns into The Happening, and you're like, oh, it's the water. With this one, this is what I wanted The Lucky Bones to be like, and I feel like they did a great job. And you know, all credit to Scott Derrickson, because this is a movie that he chose as his priority after leaving Doctor Strange 2.
Yeah, which is crazy.
And he made some pretty, like, I feel like if this is any other director, maybe, you know, maybe this stuff doesn't get noted, but the girl who played Gwen, her name's Madeline McGraw, she wasn't able to be in this movie because she's she does like voice actor or something. She's on a Disney show called like Sulphur Springs or something.
Okay.
So she wasn't able to do the movie, and Scott Derrickson was like, no, I'm super impressed with who you are as a writer or as an actor. I need you in this movie. And he put the movie on pause until she was, her schedule.
Oh, really?
Free. You know, this is a,
for a 12 right, year old.
Exactly. And this is one of those, you know, things that like, had that been like, I don't know, McKenna Grace, who seems to play every young girl, or, you know, if they took one of the kids from Stranger Things, I don't think it would have been maybe Stranger Things is a little different, but maybe they took one of the girls from Paper Girls and said, like, let's just do our best and you can get through it. It might not have been
right
as good as it was for me, because I feel like Gwen's character really was the audience. Like, she spoke directly to the audience, was like, I'm going to beat up the bullies for my brother. I thought she killed that one kid at one point, but I'm also going to try and find him. So she's like playing this detective game as we are, and we're not seeing.
What a shitty town to live in, also. Yeah. Like, every day there's, like, bloody fights between 12-year-olds. Like, bloody.
Right. Parents are beating the shit out of their kids, and nobody's doing anything.
Yeah. No. And kids are getting kidnapped or killed left and right. Like, it turns out to be five or six at the who knows?
You know what? And that's, like, one of the things that stuck with me. Like, kids are getting kidnapped, and they didn't issue, like, a curfew or, like, a lockdown. They said, all right, send your kids to school. And these kids, it's not like they're break-ins. Like, these are getting kids, like, Ethan Hawke's stealing kids after school.
Walking on the street. Yeah.
And
what's his name? It's not like Finney, you know, is our main character. I don't know if he said his name. But
Finney?
It's not like he's important. He's just another kid. So, I mean, it took like seven kids for them to go, you know what? Maybe we should let everybody know.
Right.
You know, like,
it wasn't until the kids whose mom killed herself because it becomes an issue. Like, oh, well, Finney's stolen. The rest of those kids, they were kind of dicks. They had it coming. The one Spanish kid who's doing karate kicks, no one likes him. You know, Bret Michaels.
He's going to be on season five of Karate Kid or Cobra Kai.
If he's on it, I'm here for it. Him and the kid who looked like young Bret Michaels. Put him in there. Put all those kids in there. I thought they were all great. But I also like the connection, because like Scott Derrickson obviously seems to like some of the people he works with. He included James Ranson in it, who was the cop from Sinister, who played Max, the grabber's brother. like who was all coked up. Did you now you knew kind of what was going on. Did the ending get you where you thought it was all happening in the same house, or did you have the grabber has two separate houses on your serial killer bingo card?
No. That part, that's what I didn't know. Like, all that I knew was dead kids were making phone calls.
Okay.
That was really the only part that was spoiled for me. And I usually avoid spoilers, but Binks and Nicole's mom had seen it and they wanted to talk about it. So, I don't ever say no. I just get, whatever. that was the only part that was spoiled. That I didn't know there was two houses. I just had a, like, I thought it was a good having Max go down the steps and get his head whacked. I thought it was a good scene. I thought that was really good, but I was just kind of trying to figure out. I was kind of confused by Gwen leading them to an empty house. Like, what did I have to do with it?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, but the only part of that that had me confused is the cops had been, he was across the street. So the cops had already been there and dealt with, coked out Max trying to break the case. So they had figured there was something to do, they had knocked on that door already. There had to be a reason.
Because Gwen saw that house in the first premonition. She saw a similar house This is the one. And, you think the whole thing's going to stop then. And you're like, wait, no, we got 48 more minutes left of this movie. Right. I thought that was like the chef's kiss.
That was the part I must have missed. I was wondering why they were suspicious of Max's house. And then they just ignored it on the comeback when Gwen was like, no, it's this house.
Okay. Yeah, I feel like part of it goes to bad police work, and we hear this all the time in true crime podcasts and documentaries. Yeah. They went to the grabber's house. Max was house sitting because the brother was gone. So Max is so coked up out of his mind. He's got tinfoil over the windows, and he's trying to be – he's Charlie from It's Always Sunny trying to find Pepe Sylvia. Yeah. And he doesn't even realize that his brother's van is across the street the whole time. So the cops are probably saying like, oh, I don't want to deal with this coked up weirdo. I'm going to get out of here. Speaking of coked up weirdos, there's a movie coming out in 2023 called Cocaine Bear, which is one of Ray Liotta's last films, and it's about a drug runner whose plane crashes, and a bear eats all his cocaine. And it's got real actors and actresses in it. I'm not talking like Kerry Russell's in this movie. And yeah, it's going to be rough, but
okay.
I think the best part of this whole movie was the ending when you realize that he has two houses, but also to your point about Max going down the steps, I thought that Finney was going to kill Max and that was going to be the setup for the grabber to kill Finney. And this wasn't going to have a happy ending because sometimes Stephen King and Joe Hill stories don't have happy endings. And I didn't know where I was.
No. Yeah. I mean, there are some that are realistic. I didn't hear anything about that, but I felt that for a second, and I was like, no, I think the kids will get this one. But I don't know why. I mean, that was just a thing that I felt. But yeah, this was a good one. I liked
it. Yeah, I walked away and I was like, this is one of the best movies I've seen this year.
Yeah.
I was like, I was going through all of the trivia and some of the spoilers on IMDb. If you've listened this far, you've already been spoiled. It says the grabber is based on real life serial killers Bundy, Gacy, and Dahmer. Ted Bundy would use a ruse to lure victims to help him in his car. So we saw that with when Finney was kidnapped, he dropped all his groceries.
When he drops all his stuff and he's like drunk or whatever.
John Wayne Gacy would use a belt on his victims. And Jeffrey Dahmer had one victim.
John Wayne Gacy, this guy was a magician, right? That's what he said he was.
No magic.
Yeah. Gacy was a clown.
Yeah. He made kids disappear for sure. And like, there's also the keeping the the body's like in the subfloor, like the sub basement. So like there's definitely more Gacy vibes there.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And then Dahmer had one victim escape from his apartment only to be recaptured, and we saw that with Finney as well.
By the cops. Yeah, well, yeah, and the cops brought the one guy back to him, but that's neat.
Yeah, but
bad police work, like we said before.
And that's when we saw like pure emotion from the grabber when Finney got out and he put the knife to him. He's like, "You move, I'm gonna gut you like a fish." I thought that was great. And then there was this one: every method of escape that the kids on the phone tell Finney is used in the fight to fight the grabber off at the end. The hole, the cable, the freezer with the meat used to get the dog away from the door, packing the phone with dirt, and even the padlock combination. So everything that they went into it was perfect.
Right. Like, each kid accomplished a thing and failed.
Yeah.
But they all tell him, and then he uses them all to get out.
This was such a great underrated surprise film for me. And also, James Ranson was in It Chapter 2. He played an older version of Eddie. So, you know, we've seen him in a lot of the Stephen King verse.
And also, I think, you know, it's not like he doesn't, but I think Tom Savini needs to get, like, a Lifetime Achievement Award. Like, he doesn't do, like, huge makeup in this, but that mask is pretty... It's not, like... It's very subtle, but it's very scary in the same...
Yeah, you know what I mean? The like, fact that it's three parts is kind of what's terrifying about it. Like,
and it changes.
Yeah, like,
and,
you get three different versions of terror. And, like, if I were Finney in that situation, like, you don't know which version. Like, I feel like the horns are on top for when the grabber's ready to get violent. The chin's on when the grabber's ready to, you know, kind of just be a little more talkative. And then the smile's on when he's happy. So, like, you're getting three different versions of a person, which is absolutely terrifying. It's got to be awful for every child in there. But yeah, man, this really held up to what I was hoping for. I think I had this on number 10 of my most anticipated movies. Yeah.
Oh, really? That's the, you know, that's what's crazy. It's like, I mean, and you pay a lot, you know, you have another podcast and you know, a lot of other media things going on. So you do pay more attention, but, I didn't know anything about this one.
That poster, man. You know. I think I saw the poster. It had to be maybe when Shang-Chi came out or The Eternals. And I saw it outside of Cinemark in Somerdale. And I was like, I told Chelsea, I was like, I need to see that movie. Because you don't really see Ethan Hawke play a bad guy a lot. And this was like right after he got cast as Moon Knight. And I was like, yes, this is, you know, the summer of Ethan Hawke. And I'm so glad I saw this. So we could wrap it up and we can grade this. What do you give it? 1 to 5.
You know, I'm trying to think, because it's, like I said, it splits two genres and it doesn't lean too heavy in either, but it doesn't leave anything behind either. Like, it doesn't ruin anything, or it's not trying to make up for anything. And I think it's good. I think it's really good. I think it's good at both things, and it's pretty unique. So I think I'm going to give it a 5.
I'm right there with you for the same reasons. And also, it kept me guessing to the very end. You know, I've seen so many movies. I know you're the same way, that you go into a movie and you kind of pick up tropes from different directors and different writers, and you're able to kind of predict what's going to happen. This was one of those movies that really just had me on the edge of my seat the whole time. I didn't pause it. I didn't go on a bathroom break. When it was done, I was like, Jesus, this was such a great movie. So if you've listened to us review it, I highly recommend watching it if you haven't. This is going to be one of the best movies to come out in 2022. And in fact, we're going to be able to kind of stamp that, because next week we're going to talk about all the rest of the movies that are coming in 2022 that awesome. We may be excited for or may not be excited for.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to actually do research.
And I'm going to I've compiled a list, and I have movies that are going strictly to theaters, which, you know, kind of, like we said, are important and a privilege for us to go out and get to, then there's going to be the streaming factor as well. So we're going to talk about a bunch of new content coming out, because the back end of this year has a bunch of stuff coming out. But that's it. The black phone has been answered, and it delivered. Yeah. So it was a it was a very welcomed phone call. But we'll be back next week again with our end of 2022 preview. You can follow us on social media, the Galaxy Wars Podcast. Let us know what you think of our new logo. I think it's spectacular.
Yeah. I think it's an I think this is our third one.
Two seasons, three logos. It's okay. No one's doing the math.
Yeah.
But we'll be back next week. Here's $20. Buy yourself something nice.